This interview with Jerry Griffin, Prime Flight Director for Apollo 15. Pull it on in here, wait a minute. Then we can do it like this. Yeah.
Get our things together.
Yeah. Jerry, in planning for Apollo 15, you've made the decision to go into a very difficult site. In fact, this may well be the most unusual, most technically difficult, most dangerous of all the Apollo lunar landing sites. You have a sort of a horseshoe-shaped ring of mountains some 9,800 meters into the sky from the surface. You're coming down over that ring, and you're to land within about 2 kilometers of a deep canyon. How did the decision come about, and how did you decide it was technically feasible and safe to plan a mission into this Hadley Apennine area?
Well, the decision to go to Hadley Apennine was brought about by several reasons. One, much like any time you want to do a geologic study of an area, you want to go where there has been uplift or downfalls, so something so that you can see the strata of the area. And of course, the Hadley Apennine area has got plenty of vertical development to it, so that you can study the geologic formations, the subsurface well. Now, before I comment on exactly why go there, let me mention one thing about the geology of that area. The ring that you mentioned, it's true that we are going down into this more or less of a dished out area, a bowl area. But in some ways, going into Hadley Apennine will probably be easier to recognize for Dave Scott than it has been for any previous pilot. Now, what I mean by that is, when you get to the high gate point, and that's the point in the descent where you turn the vehicle vertically so that he can now see out the window.
For the first time during his descent.
For the first time during his descent. Prior to that, he's been feet forward and face up.
Looking at the stars.
Looking at the stars. When he does this pitch-over maneuver where he can see on Apollo 15, he should very quickly be able to analyze where he is with respect to the landing site. Because he does have the Apennine Mountains to his left. He's got the rill in front of him that's easily recognizable and quickly discernible. And he's got the mountains to the right. So in some ways, the very rugged topography of the area, I feel, is going to help Dave immediately determine where he is and determine whether he needs to redesignate his landing point, either left or right or uprange or downrange. Now, the landing area itself...
All of this up to this point is predicated on you men in Mission Control guiding them through their translunar trajectory into lunar orbit and to the right path to bring them to this point.
Right.
I want to emphasize that.
That's something that we have a lot of confidence that we can do and do well. Since Apollo 12, when we put Pete Conrad and Al Bean right down next to the Cervera crater, we have felt very good about it. And on Apollo 14, we repeated that same sort of accuracy in being able to deliver the limb to a precise point. Now,
well, really, that's the point which gives you confidence. I think
right.
It's that accomplishment and that technological capability that allows you to even think about going into this bowl of mountains.
That's true. We feel very confident that we can deliver them to a point where when the spacecraft pitches over, that Dave can recognize where he is and then take over down at a lower altitude and set it down right where he wants to.
Okay, now go ahead on that point from Highgate on down.
Now, from Highgate on down, the landing problem itself, I think, will be much the same as we have seen in both Apollos 14 and 12, at least. The landing area is approximately the same roughness as Fra Mauro was on Apollo 14. And by that, I mean we've discussed the rill, we've discussed these great big huge mountains, but the landing area itself, and for several kilometers around it, is much the same as the Fra Mauro area as far as frequency and size of craters. So that the landing area where the spacecraft will actually touch down, I don't think is going to be that much different than Fra Mauro. And so the point I'm making is that the rill and the mountains may in fact be a help rather than a hindrance to landing. At least I hope that's the way it works out. We don't have this particular landing area. We don't have the very high-resolution photography that we have both north and south of this area from the Lunar Orbiter series. But we can extrapolate well from those higher-resolution areas, both north and south, to we think we know just about what this area looks like.
Well, that was to be the next thing I wanted to ask you about, and that was knowing that you only have photography with a resolution of some 20 meters. That's a boulder or a crater big enough to swallow up the lunar module.
That's right.
Now, tell me how you figure out this mathematical probability that landing site won't be covered with boulders.
Okay. What we've done there is just the scientists, the mapping people, have looked at the specific area that we're talking about. And incidentally, let me mention, the reason the specific area was picked that we did pick finally is because it does give us good access to both the rill and to the Apennine front, the Hadley Rill and the Apennine front.
The mountain range and the canyon.
And the canyon. And that's why this landing area. It also keeps the rill down sun to us during the landing. We don't have to fly across it. We're keeping that in front of us all the time, so we're landing on the east side. And what's my point?
Okay, just keep going. Now,
the way that we interpolate what this landing area is like is that when the lunar orbiter flew its series of flights, we did get some very high-resolution photos of this general Hadley Apennine area, but the area that we got these high-resolution photos is well to the north and well to the south. But by looking at the lower-resolution photography of these same areas, the mapping people and the scientists that ended up having the major input into this location feel that they can accurately interpolate and say that, yea, verily, the landing area here is approximately the same as those areas where we do have the higher resolution photography. And those areas show to be both north and south of this particular site to be very much, as I mentioned, like Fra Mauro in terms of crater size and frequency and boulder frequency. So it's more or less kind of a judgment factor, but it's made with a good sound basis. That is, both area to the north and to the south, where this same sort of topography exists, it does look good.
I'm going to put a thank you and then just keep going to sign out. This will give me some options on how we use it. Okay. Thanks very much, Jerry Griffin. This is Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. Well, Jerry, what is going to be the busiest part of this mission from the view of the men in mission control? What new things have you got to do? Just go into several of them.
Red, I think probably the biggest area of newness to us is the area of time around the lunar surface EVAs. As you know, we also have this new scientific instrumentation module called a SIMBE that is something that's entirely new to all of us. And we have found that this particular SIMBE is quite a workload on the Mission Control Center.
The scientific instruments in the back end of the command module.
That's right. Now, you will hear many times during the flight, you'll hear a lot of chatter between the ground and the crew on what instruments are to be run when we're to run the cameras that this bay has in it and so forth. And then, of course, on the way home, Al Worden will be doing a EVA where he'll go out and retrieve the film cassettes that we take while we're in lunar orbit. So the scientific instrumentation module in the command and service module system is a very new area to us. But I think the area that's going to really give us probably the biggest excitement, the biggest amount of workload, is the lunar surface walks that the crew will perform. As you're aware of, the lunar rover vehicle for the first time flown on this mission.
That involves a complete new console in mission control to monitor it, doesn't it?
Well, yes and no. We've got new people in there. We haven't, so happens we could fit them into our existing console scheme, but we have several people, more people in the control center now to deal with because of the performance of the lunar rover. We've got a television on this rover that for the first time we're going to be commanding from the ground. Now, you won't see that television while the crew is moving on along the surface, but then when they stop, they will throw some switches and align an antenna, and we'll be watching them get off the rover from there on.
Well, when we're looking at a picture of the mission control and all of the consoles, where is that man operating the camera?
He will probably be just almost out of view to you, to the bottom of the screen. That camera that that they feed to the networks is right above his head, almost, and slightly behind him.
You'll be in the back and to the left of Mission Control if you happen to be looking at a picture of you fellows operating in there.
That's right. And this man will be sending commands to this camera. He can move it in azimuth and in elevation, and he can zoom it in and out, and he can change the light control on it. So that for the first time in all of our lunar work, we should really be able to get a good picture of most of the entire operation while the crew is doing scientific data gathering. And this is going to be a big plus. In the past, we just could not afford to involve the crew spending too much time setting the camera for us, because it would start eating into their ability to do scientific objectives. Now we've got the capabilities for the ground to do that, so we're going to be able to watch them do an awful lot. And as you can imagine, anybody in the news media can imagine the kind of direction and production problems that you have when you're trying to connect a television operation 250,000 miles away.
I think the challenge toward that camera operator is going to be how to try to pan it up during liftoff.
Yes, and that's a scheme that we've worked on. We've got the geometry pretty well understood now of where we're going to park the rover and then how the sequence of commands will have to go. And I sure hope we get a good picture of it.
You mean you're going to do it mathematically, just like engineers?
Right? That's right. Not much exact science in that, so that's about the only way to do it.
Well, what other things are going to make you busier than usual in Mission Control on this mission?
Well, I think probably another area that's going to be a very busy activity is, once again, the landing phase. I think primarily because maybe we've done fewer of them. I think I happened to be the flight director for the Apollo 14 descent, and I found that I was extremely busy. And I think, without a doubt, that for a small time period, I think the landing of the lunar module on the moon is probably the toughest single event that we do. It's much like an Earth launch in reverse. But you have a lot more options available to you. And because we've done a lot more Earth launches than we have moon landings, we're a little more experienced with the Earth launches. But the lunar landing is, at best, a very, very busy schedule. And it's one that, of course, is very, very critical. Now, a lot of people would probably take exception with that and say, well, look at the ascent. That's even more critical. But from a standpoint of mission control and what the crew has to do and all, the ascent more or less kind of has to work, and you don't have a whole lot of options available to you. It either works or it doesn't, kind of that philosophy.
Well, let's see. I believe your associate, Glenn Lunny, is going to be the flight director during the landing, so he's going to handle that very busy period, right?
Right. Glenn's going to be doing the landing, and he's well prepared for it. He's been doing a lot of training for it.
Milton Wendler will handle lunar orbit insertion, ascent from the surface, and rendezvous and docking in lunar orbit. And then Gene Kranz, your boss, the division chief for flight operations here, will be handling trans-Earth injection and re-entry to Earth and some of the SIMBE activity.
That's right. We got four flight directors working this mission. That's been more or less the pattern that we followed for the last few. We didn't really intend when we started to involve Gene Kranz quite as much because, as you say, he is our boss and he's got a lot of the things that he's been working on. So, he's a real-time operator, and more he got into it, he was a little easier to talk into taking on a bigger chunk. So we've pretty well got it divided up evenly between the four of us.
Well, Jerry, in the remainder of the Apollo program, in Apollos 15, 16, and 17, do you expect them all to be equally as complex?
We have a saying here that I think is actually a very true one, is that the next mission you fly is always the toughest one. So from that standpoint, I'm sure that we'll all, by the time we get to Apollo 16, say that it has to be the toughest one, and then when we fly 17, it'll be the toughest one. But right now, the toughest one that we've ever flown is Apollo 15, and that's the one that we're all thinking about. To answer your question a little more seriously, I think that the complexity of the operation will level off with Apollo 15 because it is a J-series, so by name, a J-series spacecraft, as are 16 and 17. However, the landing areas that we will go into may throw some additional wrinkles into 16 and 17 that we can't foresee right now. Of course, the 16 site has now been settled on as the Descartes area. We know that's a very rugged area. And we're not real sure where 17 will go. But we all feel that the scientific rewards from these last three missions will by far be worth the added complexity and risk. And also we feel that Apollo 15 is going to be the real scientific return from this mission that we've always been looking for in terms of the overall situation.
Thanks very much, Jerry Griffin, Prime Flight Director for Apollo 15. This is Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston.